You're listening to the Backstage Pass podcast, hosted by Hannah Trigwell and sponsored by Tom.
Ben Matravers, how are you?
Not bad. How are you? What's going on?
I'm good. This is going to be an interesting podcast because we're very good friends and we talk a lot of rubbish, so...
And I'm proper on guard about what I've got to say now. This is like, I'm really nervous to be honest.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a lot of edit.
We can edit stuff. Is that cool?
Oh, this will be.
Oh, sound. I'm so much more relaxed now.
To improve the flow of the conversation.
Yeah. And to make sure we don't get sued or arrested. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Definitely.
Good vibes.
So, for the listeners and the viewers, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, everyone. My name's Ben. I'm a writer and producer. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I just kind of sit here and write tunes for people, and it's mint.
It is. Yeah. It is good. I can vouch when we're in there making music, we're just taking the mick out of each other the whole time. But
yeah, I think that's a lot of studio work though. I think like the vibe is as important as like the kind of content you're doing. Because if you're having a rubbish time, chances are you're not going to do anything good. I feel like It is important to have that kind of good work atmosphere, I guess. And it sounds like such a corporate like. BS kind of thing, doesn't it? Oh, good working environment and all this. But like, I think when you're doing like creative stuff, it really is like, it is important.
I remember one time when we were working together and we were just both having an off day and we were like, this isn't working. So let's go outside.
Yeah, I remember
and walk
that.
Around for a bit.
I remember that. It's one of those things of creative stuff though. You can't force it sometimes. It's difficult to be like, today I'm going to write a hit tune and this person's coming over. And sometimes it's just, it's not there sometimes. But... strange, isn't it?
Do you actually feel that pressure to write a hit tune now that you've been doing it for so long?
No, because I've given up. No, I do sometimes with some projects. So if it's like a high profile one and you've got like, this is your day with that artist. And like, I do feel that sometimes. It's not useful. I think like you got to worry about the things that you can change and influence. And I think like getting nervous about that kind of thing is not that smart use of my time. So I kind of like, I do try and take a step back and be like, right, just do what you can do. And don't put too much pressure on yourself. Like if you don't write a hit today with this person, then you might do it tomorrow. And I think it's like,
yeah, true.
Remember why you do it as well. I mean, it is our job and we do have to earn a bit of money, but it's like, that's not why we started doing it. Do you know what I mean? It's about making tunes that we like, and I think if you relax into it, that's the way it's done.
That's true. Yeah. We've had like major ups and downs with it, both of us. I think like often when we say to each other, why try harder? It's because
yeah, I know.
The stuff that we seem to try less on does better.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing.
I think everyone does it as well. You go through that cycle of like... you're having the best time and like, I'm going to be the next Max Martin or whatever. And then literally the day later, it's like, right, I quit. And I'm going to be on like, I'm going to sign on and I'm just going to like do something else for a living. Like, I'm never going to do this. I'm the worst music producer of all time. And then you kind of wake up the next day and it's like, actually, it'll be all right. It's just like,
I'm amazing.
Yeah. It's the kind of it's the cycle that I think every like creative goes through, just like overthinking everything. And just like one day like I said, you're the next Max Martin, the next day you're nobody. And it's, like, you've got to keep on top of that stuff sometimes.
When's the last time you had a dip like that?
Pretty recently, to be fair. I think, like, the whole, like, coronavirus thing's been tough, I think, for everybody. And don't get me wrong, like my friends and family are fine and all that's, like, the major important thing. And, like, me and you will survive this, do you know what I mean? Like, financially and physically, hopefully. Do you know what I mean? But it's, like, I think so, like, we shouldn't harp on about too hard. Too long about how hard it's been because it's chilling in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think there's definitely been, I've definitely felt that pressure of being like, I think because music industry is about momentum so often. It's about like, if you do something good, people can work with you and you do something else that's good and it carries on like that. And I think just because this year I've had quite a good year with production stuff and then suddenly it's like, right, you can't work for 4 months or whatever it's been. That's been stressing me out quite a lot. That's definitely been something I've been thinking about, but... but I mean, as with everything, like everyone else, exactly the same boat. You just got to adapt, don't you? So we're doing stuff with Zoom, doing like, just trying to make it work and just keeping on, keeping on.
Can you tell us about some projects that you've been working on recently?
Stuff with Hannah Trigwell. She's really good. Check her out. Yeah. To be fair, we've got a couple of cool tunes we've signed off over the the break. I'm kind of looking forward to some of them coming out.
Yeah, we have actually way more than I thought we had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was looking in the folder the other day for like finished songs that have been mixed that are just waiting to be mastered, and there's a lot.
Yeah, and they're like, I feel like the stuff we've done recently is like a step up as well. Like, I think we've done some really, really cool stuff recently. Mm. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what happens with them. Stuff for yourself, been working on a couple of tunes with Easy Life, as always. Hoping some of those end up on Spotify at some stage in the future.
So I think Easy Life are pretty well known now in the UK, but for people who are listening and watching from elsewhere, how would you describe Easy Life?
I think the fact they're so difficult to describe is like their selling point. I think it depends on like what side of bed Murray gets out of in the morning as to like what's going on or what he was listening to during the week. I think like the fact there's like no, it's really hard to define them, like pigeonhole them, is like definitely why they've done quite well. I think like if you listen to like their records and stuff, it's not like you have the same song 10 times. They've just, I think that's just like a generational thing as well. I think definitely like younger songwriters like coming through now, like it's not like you, it's like 10, 20 years ago, it's like people, you listen to Oasis or you listen to something else and then everything about you was defined by that band. Like you dressed like that. You like you started walking like Noel Gallagher or like you had your haircut like that. Do you know what I mean? Everyone, that was like,
yeah.
But it was like music influenced everything in like society. I think now like music's just because you can listen to it anywhere, it's like consumed in a much more like casual way. People listen to so much more stuff and people are so much more kind of like musically like diverse. I think that's definitely coming through with like bands and songwriters now. Like, people are just doing what they want. I think that's like why Easy Life done quite well. Like it's all kind of like fairly down tempo stuff, like hip hop kind of stuff, but it's pop music really. And like I think there's no, pop's not a dirty word. Pop just means you're doing something right most of the time.
For pop lovers like us, we're just like pop. Yeah. Pop's great.
I think there's a real snobbery about it sometimes though. People get really weird about the word pop music and like people think they're too cool for it. And if it's like, pop music isn't like the Spice Girls, you know what I mean? Pop music is like, pop music is Dave's last record, you know what I mean? It's a cool, Arctic Monkeys are pop music, if you want, 1975 is pop music, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not like pop music is just something that Simon Cowell's manufactured in his underground lab somewhere. It's like, pop is just stuff that people like, I think. I think it's definitely a bad like mentality to get into. I see it a lot with like, producers as well, and people thinking they're a bit too cool to write pop music. And I personally, I'd like, I'm sure you're the same, like I find like writing good pop songs is the hardest thing to do. Like writing something simple that cuts through and hasn't necessarily been done exactly the same before, and finding that new way of saying something that's been said a million times is like, that's the goal at the end of the rainbow that everyone's chasing, I guess. But it's so much easier said than done. Like try and write a song with four chords that someone hasn't written before, the same four chords that have been used in like 10 million songs before. It's not easy. Anyway, I'm rabbiting now. I can't remember what we're talking about. This is what happens when I haven't seen you for a long time. I'm just going to talk absolute waffle. So
no, it's good. Yeah. So we haven't had a session for, it's got to be like 3 or 4 months.
I've not seen you for ages, but bear in mind, like,
yeah,
like you said at the beginning, we're quite good mates and we probably see each other like a couple of times a week normally.
Yeah.
It's weird chatting to you through like a 5-inch screen. It's odd.
It is strange. Yeah. We've been working together for 8 years.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
You've been working with Easy Life for the same or not, if not longer, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not necessarily in their like current form. I think Easy Life's been like a kind of an evolution of like, so Murray the singer is my brother, and like we've been kind of growing up together and writing tunes together since we were kids really, and like he's been kind of in and out of bands, and Easy Life's taken like a long kind of evolution to get to where they are now. I think people don't realize that when they see a band come up, like if it's, say for example, they got on BBC Sound Poll, they were like second in the BBC Sound Poll, and it was like suddenly like, oh, there's someone to watch next year. And I think people just like kind of assume that, oh, they must have formed like last year or the year before or whatever, but they just, it's a new project. But like they're 8 years deep in that project, easy, like learning their trade, like not necessarily as the stuff they're doing now, but there's, so but Murray's like, he's had like part-time jobs and stuff, and he's done some weird jobs to be fair, but like he's been a musician kind of self-employed musician, kind of scraping by for like, since he's left school. So he's what, 20, I should know how old he is, really. He's like 24-ish now. So like, he's probably been doing it for 6 years, a long time, kind of part-time jobs. I mean, well, they got signed a couple of years ago, so. But yeah, it's been a long time coming, their success. So I'm glad I'm glad it's happened.
From when you were first like songwriting and producing, obviously your studio now is full of really cool kit, but what did you start off with?
Started off with a secondhand laptop and a really, really, really terrible interface and like a 20 quid microphone. And that's like literally it. And it's slowly grown and eaten all my money into the things you can see behind me. And the things you can't see, which are over there. But it's very easy to get very obsessed with what synth you're using, and I don't necessarily think it matters that much a lot of the time. It's about the ideas and how you use the kit. Don't get me wrong, it's really useful to have like nice stuff if you got it for the right reasons and all the rest of it. But I don't think it's not the be all and end all. Like, I kind of try and section my work, if you like. So when you're in the writing process, that you're not necessarily using too much technology and too much stuff, because I think it's not necessarily that helpful for the creative process if you're just thinking what synth shall I use here? What, like, you start thinking like in the mix, and I don't think it kind of gets you out of your, I kind of section it into kind of like writing and production and like engineering. It's like two separate jobs. So like, I don't think like kit is necessarily, from a songwriter's point of view, is necessarily the be all and end all. It is nice to have. It's a nice luxury to have. But I mean, the stuff you're looking at behind you is like, yeah, like you said, probably 10 years plus in the making.
What are the pieces that you just couldn't, the things that you now couldn't do without?
Do you know, a lot of it's the really boring stuff. So like, I think for people watching, if you're looking to like spend some money on some studio stuff, the most important stuff for me is like some decent converters. It's like, it's really, really boring, and it's horrible spending like £1,000 on a box, which you've already got a box for 100 quid that does the same thing. And like, but it's like, when you're listening back to stuff, you can make better decisions, and like the stuff that you're recording sounds immediately just does sound better. So I think stuff like that is really important. Like, kind of like the exciting stuff, I'd struggle to live without my Moog. I do love that thing, which you can kind of see over my right shoulder. I've had like a few profits over the last year. They're just great, because I think a lot of the time, the kind of, especially the music I make at the moment, it's just you can immediately get something which takes up a fairly like sizable chunk of space in the mix, but kind of sits well underneath a vocal, and you could chain it to a kick or something, so it gets out of the way easy enough. But they just take up a decent amount of space, and they sound great. And they're so easy to sculpt, just everything's in front of you, you can make decisions there and then print it into your computer, and what happened in that moment was like the right thing to happen, kind of thing. The cool thing about them is they're quite like wobbly sounding, if that makes sense. If you get like a soft synth, everything's like very, very perfect sometimes. There's a lot of stuff you can do to make it less perfect, but like the Prophet 5, which is the Prophet 6, this is so boring. Everyone's going to turn it off by now.
This is gold.
The reason that one was so cool was because it's just like a bit unpredictable, and every now and again it will go out of tune, it wobbles a bit, but it gives stuff character.
Yeah.
I think that's, it can be like quite easy to make quite like soulless music with a laptop sometimes. I think stuff like that's very, very easy to add a bit of like warmth and like kind of sloppiness sometimes, and stuff that isn't like necessarily straight on grid. I try and work as much as I can without quantizing stuff. So I mean, it's like anyone can program a beat, but like not many people can play one. Do you know what I mean? With like feel. I feel that's really, really important at the moment, because like everyone's got a laptop, everyone's making music, and I think the less perfect stuff is now probably the better. Isn't that weird?
What do you think about programming feel?
It can be done. Yeah, it can be done. And like, yeah, it's definitely can be done. It's just, it depends what you're trying to achieve, I guess. Like for drums, it can be done quite easily. I think it's quite difficult to program like something where you're like a piano, for example, or a synth where you're using like six fingers or something. It's quite difficult to program how a hand had spread across a piano or something. And it can be done, but like it'd take you all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to do that?
No. I've got a very short attention span.
Yeah, fair enough. What's the synth that's behind
this thing? This thing is a Moog MS-20, which I've stolen from a friend of mine.
Nice.
I'm having quite a good time with it, actually. It's a weird one. It's like, again, it's like an emulation of an old Moog thing. It's like they've re-released an old synth. I, to be honest with you, I don't really know how it works, but I've had quite a good time just mucking about with it and making really weird noises with it. It's like a proper analog synth where you have to like really know what you're doing, so it does require a bit of like thought and like a lot of, you know, when you get a new synth, usually you flick through the presets, find something that's cool, then kind of tweak it a bit to sculpt it into where you are, where you want to be. Mm. This thing you have to kind of start from scratch and actually think about it, but it's been quite nice. I've enjoyed having it. I do need to give it back.
Have you ever had a situation where you've bought a new piece of gear and then thought, oh no, I've literally got all the gear and no idea?
Yeah, like literally everything you see here. Yeah.
You just figure it out sort of after the facts.
Yeah. To be fair, the Moog was a bit like that. I had it such a long time now. It was the first proper like analog synth that I bought. I've had
it's
quite
the sub 20 sub 37, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like I got it when it first came out. It's like one of the first generation thing. It was definitely, I kind of learned a lot from using that. I'd had like kind of cheaper synths before, like I had a Roland Gaia before that, and I had a few things like kind of cheap Korg stuff before. But I'd never.
What happened to the Roland Gaia?
I got rid of it because I've got too many synths. It's a cool synth, actually.
It looks really nice.
Yeah, it's a really cool little synth. If I had space, I'd probably kept it. But
have you ever got a piece of kit where you've gotten rid of it quite fast because you realised that it wasn't an efficient way of working? What was that?
I got an Avalon channel strip for running bass through and found it was just nowhere near as good as my Universal Audio LA610.
Okay.
That stayed about 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I've had a few synths which have kind of been and gone. I'm kind of quite at peace with like roughly where everything's at the moment. I've kind of got a cool little thing going on.
Yeah.
But I've had speakers that have come and go. I've had like replacements for the vocals, but I've had these vocals about 6 years now. And
yeah,
everything I get is, I think, because I know them really well. It's not necessarily that anything's better or worse. I know how all these speakers sound like now. It's quite difficult to get rid of them.
But, yeah. What speakers did you have before the vocals?
I had some Adams. They were quite nice, some Adams, similar kind of design to these ones, but just not these ones. If anybody is still here listening to me geek out with this, we've got way too much free time.
People, including myself, are interested, genuinely interested in this stuff. I've known you write a lot in your basement where you are now. How do you feel in terms of writing elsewhere? Are you more comfortable with writing at home, or do you like?
I don't mind it. I quite like a bit of daylight every now and again. Not too much, but just like a little bit of token daylight now and again. Obviously, it's like I've got all my stuff here, so if I want to do something, everything's like I've got my workflow is here really, really nicely. But it is quite nice to get a change of scenery sometimes, and like it kind of changes your workflow a little bit sometimes if you haven't got, and your kind of way of thinking if you haven't got the usual stuff you rely on. So yeah, it's definitely.
Because
nice.
I remember when you had a, was it just a Mac? It was like a standalone computer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Do you ever like produce on the go now that you've got a laptop?
Yeah, I do. Just because I spent like a fair amount of time on trains, I try and do like just the boring stuff like vocal edits, like all the stuff that everyone like avoids doing. I try and do that. I try and busy myself if I'm out and about. The only thing with that is I find you kind of like, your heart isn't in it. If you're not in a studio and you're not like sat there in the environment, it's quite hard to like actually get into something. And I'm really conscious of being that knobhead on the train who's got Logic open with his, and it's just like everyone's looking at them being like, what are you trying to prove? Do you know what I mean? I was really conscious of being that guy.
Did part of you love it though when you first started? I used to love working on projects on trains.
But for like file next to that person that goes and sits in Starbucks and answers their emails, do you know what I mean? And everyone hates that guy.
Yeah, I know what you mean, to be fair.
It's a bit like Train Guy, Bob Mortimer's Train Guy.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, anyone's not seen that, you're welcome. You should definitely get involved.
Although I don't know whether only... Do you feel like it's kind of only a thing that British people would really get? Because it's like a British stereotype, isn't it, of the kind of business guy that's on a train to London. If anybody hasn't seen Train Guy by Bob Mortimer on Twitter, then you won't understand what we're talking about. But it's like a parody of a businessman who's on a train having a very loud conversation with a colleague. And it's just great. It is great. But we're not like that because we're just headphones on, like doing the thing.
Yeah, I guess, but I think it's because I spend so much time on my own in the basement. As soon as I get around anybody else, I'm just immediately so paranoid about what, like, being, like, viewed by another human being is just really weird. Your job is literally being watched by people, but I like kind of sitting in my basement and keeping myself to myself. That's my, that's my vibe.
That's your vibe. Yeah. It's a good vibe, to be fair. We, when we work together, we're in a kind of flow where it's very clear that we have certain roles in our songwriting, and then you're the producer, and then sometimes we use another mixing engineer and it gets mastered by somebody else. But if you had to give yourself one job title, songwriter, producer, mixer, whatever, what would it be?
Songwriter, definitely. I think the rest...
Songwriter.
Like, I'm pretty confident now that I can say I'm like a producer. Like, I'm pretty happy saying that I can do either of those jobs like reasonably well, but like it's all started from songwriting. And kind of, I do, again, I do mix. I do a bit of mixing, and like I can mix, but I still feel a bit nervous about calling myself a mix engineer. Like, just because I'm not at the, like, I'm a perfectionist, and I'm not at the level where I is perfect yet.
It's and such a specialism as well, isn't it?
Like, it is.
The person that we use to mix some of my pop stuff, Lee Smith from Greenmount Studios, he just spends every day, all day mixing, doesn't he?
He does some production as well, to be fair. He's a great producer as well, but he thinks very differently from like you and me in terms of like, if you give him a piece of gear or an emulation of a piece of gear, he can tell you everything about it. He can tell you what it does to like the wave. He'll have tested it. He'll know. Do you know what I mean? He knows everything about it, but like, and this stuff does interest me to an extent, but like, I think of it much more like, I guess, creatively than technically than someone like Lee does, but the fact he does that means he's like one of the most in demand mix engineers at the moment. Like, he's very, very good at his job because he knows all the technicalities of it. I think to be a good mix engineer, you do need to have that like real interest in the kind of real geeky side of how it works. And like, I think I get a bit too tied up in the creative side of it to say that I am a mix engineer. Like, I'm comfortable mixing and I'd mix a fair amount of stuff, but it's like,
yeah,
I still definitely would find myself at the songwriting end of the chain, really.
When did you first start writing songs then?
Like, when I was like, I don't know, generically young, like 10 or something, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But...
because you had an artist project, didn't you, to start off with?
Yeah. And like, to be fair, I found some on my computer like literally a couple of days ago, and it's all really terrible. It's all really, really bad. But like, I'm glad it happened because it's part of the learning process.
Right.
I think it's important though, like, to people to realise that when you hear stuff like, so bands you like or like whoever it is, like, they've made some really awful music first. And like, there'll be a few exceptions, like your Stevie Wonders and people like that. But like, most people have written some awful music. And like, just because the stuff you hear now is really good, like, it's important to like... I've definitely done it. Like we were saying earlier, when you get to the end of the day and you think, this is like the worst song anyone's ever written, I quit. I'm going to go, like, I'm going to join the army. But like, it's important to know that everyone does that. And like, not every day, like, you get up and write a hit tune. And everyone has written some really awful music. But I do it less than I used to, but that's it. That's progression.
That is progression, actually. Sometimes I get into a bit of a funk with not necessarily with songwriting, but with the whole thing, and just think, you know, what's the point? And have to pull myself out of that. And I do pull myself out of that, but it is in waves, and sometimes the dip comes because you feel like you've just written the best song you've ever written. And then there's obviously gonna be a come down from that high.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the thing that starts it, but then you just have to carry on. Like, how many songs do you think you're writing now per week or month?
At the moment, less than I should be, but it's like, if we forget Corona, I've been like probably 2 or 3 sessions a week. So I would have thought I'd easily writing, like writing and finishing probably 12, 15 songs a month probably.
And does it feel... to you, like, every single one is better and better and better?
I can definitely see the progression, not like necessarily each song individually, but if you look back like 6 months before Like, you can definitely see. Like, I find it weird when, like, we've got a track coming out. I don't know when this video is going to go out, but, like, quite soon, like next week.
Oh, it'll be out. It will be out already. Yeah.
But we did that probably, what, a year and a half ago now, maybe? I don't even know. It was definitely a while ago. And, like, I always find it weird going back to music we did, like, ages ago and thinking, oh, like, what have I done here? Is this cool? Is that cool? Or whatever. Like, to be fair, this is going to be out by the time this is out.
Yeah, it will be out.
Dreams is great and it still sounds great, but like I always get really nervous when you go back and listen to stuff and it's like,
yeah,
I did that a while ago, I hope it's not terrible.
Yeah, but plus there's the whole thing of, not that like we're following a trend of any kind, because I do think that some of the sounds that we've used in my music are, they're just, it's just not following anything, but sometimes I just get really aware of the fact that when you write a song and then you record the song and get the song mixed and mastered, then potentially at least a few months have gone by. Is it even still, even if you're not following a trend, is it even still relevant? I have that like paranoia about music, definitely.
Especially when you're songwriting as well, when you're doing kind of observational songwriting and you're kind of picking up on stuff that's happening. And then it can be, is this still going to have the weight it's got now in 6 months' time when it comes out or whatever.
Yeah.
It's definitely a weird way of looking at it. But.
And then there's that thing of, I've written a song that with you that is called a name, I'm not going to say it.
Ooh, holding back.
of a song that somebody who's very big has just released.
That really, really annoyed me, actually.
It annoyed me as well. And it's just one of those things, because it's not the same song, obviously. It's a different song. It's just called the same name. But, you know, I've had an album which is called the same name as somebody else's big album.
The good thing about it was, and not to wish, like, bad things upon anyone else, but the good thing is that song flopped and it's all right.
Do you think it did?
Yeah, it wasn't her finest work. It's so, like, I know that's really awful celebrating somebody else's misfortune, but that's not usually my vibe.
I kind of have the feeling that when my song comes out, people won't compare it.
No.
But if it had come out at the same time, which, to be fair, would have been on track with my original schedule, I would have been gutted.
Yeah.
Because there's no competing with an artist of her level, but I'm getting over it.
You sure?
Everything's fine. But that song is like super stripped, really.
I think it's probably the best song you've ever written, I think. But then
Dreams is like kind of full production with a bit of organic sounding drums. What do you prefer personally? Do you prefer writing like full productions or like
I think there's
stripped stuff?
It depends on the song. I don't like the production is, I think good production is not necessarily like having bells and whistles and like using this compressor or that or this drum machine or whatever. Good production is about supporting the songwriting, and I think every decision you make has got to be, does this make the song better? Not like it's not are people going to listen to this and think, oh, look what that guy did with this drum, that's really cool. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not about that, it's about how is that song better. And I think like good, so I don't tend to hear production like in that like big or small kind of way. I hear production in terms of like, how is it making the song amazing? Do you know what I mean? I think that's like the important thing to think, like, when, especially when you're producing stuff at home, like the classic ones, people get a drum loop. They'll get a 4-bar drum loop and think, yeah, that sounds banging. We'll have that for 3 minutes. But like, then you'll find that the song doesn't ebb and flow. And it's like, does that drum beat in that might be really cool, but does that make that specific part of the song better? Probably not. But from your point of view, saying like, is it a kind of big production? That drum beat might be amazing. It might be really, might be really technically amazing. Might have some really interesting drum production, but like the production overall might be bad because it's not supporting the songwriting. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of how I view stuff. It's like how the production affects like the overall experience of the listener, rather than, and that's a really like pretentious answer.
No, but it's like, not. It's
that's
good.
That's how I kind of try and approach stuff, when producing things.
I Have you always thought about it like that?
No, definitely not. And like, definitely not. It's definitely something I've learned like over the last few years, I think. Like, I think, right. To be fair, everyone, I think because the way people, I think especially now with like Instagram and kind of like everyone puts everyone up on a pedestal and everything's like, oh, you should be like this, or you should, how many likes does this kind of thing get? And especially when you approach production like that, it's like, oh, I want to be like Max Martin. I want to be like Diplo. And what does Diplo do? Oh, he does all this cool stuff with his vocals. That's why he's such an amazing producer, because he does this distorted pitch shifty thing. It's like, no, that's not necessarily why that's not necessarily good production, but it's quite easy to go down that, oh, I need a signature, I need this, that, and the other. Like, yeah. I think when you listen to like really great producers, like they don't necessarily have something which you can immediately tell it's them. It just sounds like the artist at the best. If you take like Fraser T. Smith or something like that, they've worked with Storms and they've worked with Adele, who are like probably opposite ends of like the pop music spectrum, and you can't necessarily hear Fraser in that. You just hear the artist making their best music.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's what, like, for me, that's what like kind of colourless like production is, the really good stuff for me.
Yeah. But fair.
Anyway, pretentious answer only. Over. Yeah.
And do you feel like with the improvements in your studio in terms of like products and kit that you have improved sometimes because of having access to that kit?
I think sometimes it does make your workflow quicker. It means you can make decisions quicker and you spend less time like obsessing over something. So like the Moog, for example, if you want like a kind of thick sub bass or something that's going to take up space immediately, and that you don't have to be like mucking about with soft synths and kind of taking in frequencies in and out, you can pretty much turn it on and I know roughly how to get that sound immediately.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. I know how much bass it's going to take up in the mix. I know what frequency band it's going to take up. I can do all my automation on the instrument as it's played in. And that decision takes 10 minutes instead of mucking about with the soft synth and drawing it all in and taking an hour, which means you can spend your energy making decisions about, like I said, making the song better rather than spending your energy thinking about what gear you're using. I think so. There's definitely an element that it can speed up stuff, but like, I think it's the decisions that are important. It's not necessarily the kit. Mm. You can make the same decisions on something else, and the song might still do just as good. Do you know what I mean? I think it's
true. There's two instances when I've been like, when your progression from my point of view in terms of production has been very fast. And the first one that I think of is when you got the Focal speakers.
Yeah.
And the second one is the UAD still.
Yeah, I was going to say when I got a new laptop and changed all my software. Yeah.
I think it's because you could hear it better.
Yeah. I think it's the decision-making process. So I used to use a lot. I still use it. The Waves plugins, for example, and like if you compare, say, so I now use a lot of the UAD stuff amongst other stuff. Mm. But like if you take, say, the 1176 compressor on the Wave stuff and the 1176 on the UAD, they're like, although they're emulating the same kind of classic piece of gear, they sound completely different. Yeah. And it's the UAD stuff. I find you can just make a decision and you can do it, and it sounds exactly how you expect it to sound, exactly what you want, and that decision is made. And it's like you can go on to making other decisions. I think like that UAD stuff has just freed up a lot of headspace, I think.
Mm.
I think that's probably why. I think definitely, and also because my old computer was knackered and I spent a lot of time, I spent a lot of time shouting at the computer.
Wheel of death.
Oh, don't. I can't believe I held out for so long on getting a new laptop. I can't believe that.
We had so many times like recording covers and stuff where you were just like, ah, not again.
Yeah, I know, and you've lost half an hour of work. It's awful. Yeah, but think it's that, it's the headspace, not necessarily the work time. It's those, like, it just puts you in the wrong frame of mind, and like I said, you're just making like decisions based on like, is this gonna like upset my computer rather than is this making the song better?
True.
If I look back, that's definitely a marked time of improvement, is sorting that out. The UAD stuff's really good though, in terms of like nerding out on gear stuff. The UAD stuff, it is expensive, but it is very, and it's like one of those boring things like converters where you buy like some software, and like I know like 99.9% of the producer like world watching this right now has been like, I buy software, what an idiot, no one buys software. But like the UAD stuff is really good and you should definitely buy it 100%, but it is very, very boring way to spend your money, but it will make your life better.
I mean, it's boring to people that aren't interested in it.
Yeah.
But like You were dead excited when you got that stuff.
Yeah, don't tell everybody. People think I'm sad. Yeah, I was.
The geek in you was really, really happy.
I was loving life. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of setup, what's the dream? What's the, like, end goal?
End goal is to have a massive barn at the end of my substantial ground at the bottom, which is converted into, it's like 25,000 square foot monstrous Abbey Road type setup. But we need to write a few hits first.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Honestly, my main goal is to get some natural light in the studio. I think that is my next big goal. I know you can't buy that from Tommen. Sorry, I should say something which is a bit more on brand. But natural light is the big one. Yeah.
Will you be able to do that in the setup that you're in now?
No, not unless I break my house.
But, fair.
But I'm hoping to move over the next couple of years and get somewhere with some natural light. But I spent the whole of my 20s in a dark room somewhere.
Becoming a mole slowly. Yeah.
Look what's happened.
Do you still get cabin fever?
I've spent my whole adult life in a cabin. I wouldn't know. Until I get released into the wild, I won't know.
So if you had to talk to yourself 10 years ago when you first started out, what would you say to do or not to do?
So it'll be all right. Don't worry about it. don't panic. Your life will be all right, mate. Don't worry. No, I don't know. I think the best piece of advice I ever got was that the music industry isn't that far away. And I think there's often people see when they're first starting out, you look and you're making tunes sat in your bedroom and 10 people are listening to it on Spotify, and then you're kind of, you tune to radio and you hear people like Phineas and you hear people like big names, do you know what I mean? Mark Ronson's and all this. And the music industry and the labels that are supporting these acts and producers seem so far away, and they're not. The music industry isn't based in some gold towers in LA somewhere. They're literally an email away. They're one upload on BBC Introducing away. Do you know what I mean? It's not. The music industry isn't this mythical thing somewhere. Because it's such a glamorous industry to get into, people assume that, and kind of a desirable industry to get into. It's not glamorous at all. But on the outside, it's got this kind of air of glamour about it.
Yeah.
I think people assume that people are untouchable and these labels are untouchable and they're just you can't get hold of them. But actually, the music industry is, on the whole, very friendly, very helpful, and people want to be involved. And if you send people an email and you... How many emails, when you're younger, have you typed out and saved in your drafts and think, oh, maybe they're too busy, maybe they don't want to hear from me, maybe they're going to think I'm a knobhead, maybe... Do you know what I mean? And you overthink stuff, and most of the time, the worst case situation is when you won't reply. Best case, they'll reply with something helpful and say, now's not the right time, or something positive will come of it. I think it's so easy to overthink stuff in the music industry because it's got that kind of very intimidating facade at the front, but actually it's quite chilled out and it's actually quite a fun place to work. So just get on with it. Don't wait, don't procrastinate, just get on with it. I think you can't be approaching people thinking, oh, look at all these amazing things they could do for me, it'd be such a great opportunity for this, that and the other. If you haven't got something to give to them, then there's going to be no relationship. That could be your music. It could be just that you've got some great songs, and that is something. But if you have that kind of stargazy kind of look at it, that's not. You have to think of it a bit smarter than that, I think, and just be quite pragmatic about what you've got to offer and what you can offer other people, as well as opportunities that they can offer you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you got to think, most A&R people that tell you my email or whatever, their job is literally to reply to emails like yours. Do you know what I mean? They want to hear from new talent. They want to hear new songs. They want to be the person that discovers the next whoever it is. And that may well be you. So just get in touch with people. I'd say reach out.
Speaking of new talent, what is your track of the week?
Ooh, wow. I had a track out this week with a new artist called Josie Proto, a track called Burner. We've done quite a few tracks over lockdown over Zoom, actually, which has been quite a good vibe.
How's that been going?
On the whole, before lockdown, I hated Zoom stuff. Anything like this, I wasn't about that, because I found it quite hard to have that connection, immediate reaction, reconnection you need with a songwriter. But yeah, we've made it work quite well. We've written some cool tunes together. She's really good. She's kind of like coming up quite quickly. Yeah, go and have a listen to Burner, people. It's a good tune.
My final question is, what is the best lesson you've learnt in your career so far?
Probably, just because you can doesn't mean you should, I think, was something I was told for production, which is like, because
yeah,
I think because I'd spent like a long time before as a producer playing, and I'm a fairly like competent player, like a lot of time you kind of hear stuff and you think, oh, I could put something amazing, like little synth riff in there, or I could do something like outrageous in here and people will think I'm amazing. And then all your tracks are just like a complete mess. And I think it's just like, if you've got more than like, if you bounce stuff out to mix and there's more than kind of like 40, 50 channels going on, you're probably doing something wrong and you need to have a word with yourself.
And like, do you remember on that song, you had like 120 stems,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah. And do you know what I mean? But like literally like 90 of them are probably completely unnecessary. I think,
yeah.
I think, yeah, be brutal. Always reference back to like, does this make the song better? And if the answer is no, delete it. No matter how cool it is, just delete it, because it probably doesn't need to be there. If it doesn't make the song better, then like you're doing stuff for the wrong reasons, I think.
Yeah, so just, fair enough.
Yeah, always treat, even production, just always treat everything like from a songwriter's point of view, I think. And just, yeah, have a good
solid
time
advice.
Doing it. Yeah.
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately, but it's been great speaking to you as always.
It's been fun.
It's been weird speaking to you, seeing your face. But yeah, it's been weird because we normally just talk rubbish for hours on end and then say, we should get some work done.
Yeah, fully.
And then get some work done. But yeah, what have you gone for the rest of the week?
A couple of writing sessions, the kind of new normal writing over Zoom. A couple of those, bit of production. Nothing that exciting, to be honest with you. I'm probably going to spend most of it in this room on my own. But such is life. Good vibes.
That's
what
you like, where you like to be, isn't
it? Yeah, to be honest with you, nothing's changed with coronavirus. I've been like self-isolating for 8 years. So it's all good.
Brilliant. All right, have a great week and I will see you soon.
See you soon.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. Be sure to hit subscribe and leave a comment to let us know what you think, and I will see you next time on Backstage Pass.